Hello, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader Joanne Lowney with the Wall Street Journal Business News for Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. And here are today's business headlines. Risk Report: Pivotal Child Safety Trial Starts in California. Plus, Disney sues FCC over license review, and Europe's rivers are drying up, threatening its economy, by Yusuf Khan. Chinese humanoid robot leader soars in market debut despite U.S. ban. Unitree Robotics is the first humanoid maker to list in mainland China, by Raphael Huang. Basic Materials Roundup Market Talk. Find insight in evolution mining, blue scope steel, and more in the latest market talks covering basic materials. Why Wall Street thinks the brutal bond route is just getting started. Plus, big food fights to win over not-so-hungry GLP-1 users, and LinkedIn accidentally becomes a dating site. What Matt Navarro, CEO of Stanley 1913, has learned from his personal board of advisors, by Leah McClellan. Big food, biggest challenge, people who don't want to eat anymore. With GLP-1s threatening the billions in sales, prepackaged food makers are testing ways to win over the not-so-hungry, by Amira McKee and Jesse Newman. Photography by Evan Jenkins for WSJ. Our first article today is the Morning Risk Report. Pivotal child safety trial that could change Instagram starts in California. Plus, Disney sues FCC over license review, and Europe's rivers are drying up, threatening its economy, by Yusuf Khan. Good morning. Opening arguments in a child safety trial against Meta platforms began Tuesday in what could be the most consequential social media harm case yet. Addictive platforms? The case brought by the State Attorneys General of California, Kentucky, Colorado, and New Jersey will explore whether Meta violated state consumer protection laws and the Federal Children's Online Privacy Protection Act of 1998, commonly known as COPPA, by knowingly making its platforms addictive and going after young users. Opening salvo, what you're going to hear in this trial is how Meta hooked children on its platforms. Megan O'Neill, a Deputy Attorney General for the California Department of Justice, said during opening arguments in the case taking place at a federal courthouse in Oakland, California. It designed platforms so that children would keep coming back. More to come. Meta is facing thousands of lawsuits from more than 40 states' attorney generals, school districts, and individual social media users that aligned the company prioritized growth over safety of its underaged users, and could force it to change the ways its platforms operate. Disney sues FCC over license review, says government trying to squash free speech. Walt Disney's ABC sued Federal Communications Commission, alleging the agency's efforts to challenge its broadcast license and regulate its talk show, The View, are illegal, and an effort to squash free speech the Trump administration finds objectionable. In a suit filed in federal court in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, ABC said, "Again and again, the administration has attacked ABC's speech, the stories its journalists report, and the viewpoints its network programs air. Over time, these attacks have escalated into express demands that ABC be stripped of its broadcast license because of its speech." Business Group's press employer regulator for clarity on race gender reporting. Some business groups and investors told the U.S. employment regulator its bid to cut race and gender reporting could veil what could be essentially insight into workforces, Risk Journal reports, free link. The remarks followed the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's bid in July to rescind its requirement for companies to file annual reports detailing breakdowns of employees' race and sex. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro signed an executive order Tuesday placing strict guardrails on new data centers, joining several states that are moving to limit the facilities fueling artificial intelligence rise. Trump administration regulators are trying to axe long-standing rule meant to ensure that investors get the best price when trading stocks. Investors aren't happy about it. Federal prosecutors charged 17 Iranian nationals with running a years-long cyber theft operation that stole troves of intellectual property and academic research for Tehran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and others. President Trump has selected one of his top White House health aides, Dr. Heidi Overton, as his next choice to lead the Food and Drug Administration, people familiar with the matter said. Apple plans to change its terms for app developers in the European Union, seeking an end to a years-long antitrust dispute over how the tech company manages its devices and app store that included 500 million euro, $579 million fine. 44 million is the number of acres of national forest land that U.S. Forest Service is aiming to open to logging and road construction, a reversal of policy that protected wildlife habitats for decades. Europe's rivers are drying up and threatening its economy. A series of severe heat waves and prolonged droughts have turned many European riverbeds into barren sandscapes this summer. Major arteries for trade and agriculture across the continent, including the Rhine, Danube, and Po, are now at record low levels, disrupting freight transportation, forcing nuclear power plants to shut reactors, and eroding agricultural productivity. Trump pauses 50% tariff on some Canadian products. President Trump said he would pause a 50% tariff on certain goods from Canada for 3 days while the two countries seek to finalize an agreement. The now 50% tariff was set to cover $20 billion worth of Canadian goods, about 5% of Canada's annual exports to the U.S., ranging from hockey sticks and electronics to plastics and building materials. Iranian attacks on shipping in the Strait of Hormuz are piling up without an American military response, raising the risk of crossing the strategic waterway and frustrating some Arab allies who worry the U.S. doesn't have a strategy to wind down the conflict. Tech companies are offering community investments, jobs guarantees, and open houses to counter a growing public backlash against AI data centers. President Trump is pushing aides for a meeting as soon as this fall with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, U.S. officials said, seeking to revive a dramatic diplomatic quest from his first term to convince Kim to abandon his country's nuclear weapons program. Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema, the pro-business leaders of Africa's number two copper producer, won a second five-term in a vote marred by opposition allegations of fraud and repression. What else matters? An experimental mRNA-based vaccine succeeded in preventing cancer from coming back or spreading again in a study of high-risk melanoma patients, Moderna and its partner Merck said Wednesday. Natalie Harp, a 35-year-old personal aide to President Trump, has become an object of fascination and a target of political debate. Packaged food makers are testing new strategies to appeal to consumers using GLP-1 weight loss drugs, which suppress hunger and alter taste. Renewed interest in nuclear power is colliding with a mania over artificial intelligence at the Idaho National Laboratory's Desert Campus, a remote site that spans an area nearly twice the size of Los Angeles. Follow us on LinkedIn. Send tips to our reporters, Max Fillion, at max.fillion@dowjones.com, Clara Hudson at clara.hudson@wsj.com, Yusuf Khan at yusuf.khan@wsj.com, and Richard Vanderford at richard.vanderford@wsj.com. Our next article is Chinese Humanoid Robot Leader Soars in Market Debut Despite U.S. Ban. Unitree's market value tops $50 billion, helped by investor frenzy and Beijing's backing. By Raphael Huang. Singapore, a pioneering Chinese maker of humanoid robots, soared 460% in its trading debut in Shanghai to achieve a market value of $51 billion, symbolizing the frenzy around the industry Beijing hopes to dominate. Unitree Robotics is the first humanoid maker to list in mainland China and stands at the forefront of the geopolitical competition between Washington and Beijing. Last month, the U.S. banned most imports of new humanoid robot models, citing an immediate national security threat. For its part, the Chinese government has identified embodied artificial intelligence robots and other devices that apply AI to the physical world as one of the six future industries expected to drive the economy over the next 5 years. Last year, Chinese companies shipped thousands of robots along with the components globally, solidifying the country's dominance in the world's robotic supply chain. Unitree's robots are already familiar to hundreds of millions of Chinese, owing to their appearance in nationally televised Lunar New Year programs in which they have danced and performed kung fu. Online videos have shown Unitree robots performing backflips and cartwheels. The company's revenue last year was about $250 million, with about $40 million in profit, signifying that the $50 billion-plus valuation is built on expectations of rapid growth. Unitree's initial public offering was the most oversubscribed ever on Shanghai's NASDAQ, like Star Market. Nearly 9.8 million investors sought to a piece of the company ahead of its debut, with fewer than 1 in 5,000 achieving success. The company, whose official name is Yushu Technology, is headed by Wang Qingxing, 36, a mechanical engineer in training. Wang began developing robots in college and founded his companies a decade ago in Guangzhou. On Wednesday, he wore a red scarf as he struck the gong to kick off trading. In its offering perspective, Unitree highlighted geopolitical risks, saying more than 40% of its revenue came from the outside of China, and its business could shrink if Washington tightens trade restrictions. Analysts at Bernstein said that they expected Washington to blacklist leading Chinese robotic companies and block U.S. investors from putting money into Chinese robot technology. The Unitree IPO coincided with the start of an annual robot conference in Beijing, where hundreds of robots were competing in athletic events and real-world chores such as sorting warehouse merchandise and folding laundry. Chinese humanoid robots have made significant progress, including beating humans' record time in a half marathon. Yet the technology is still a long way from replacing what a skilled factory worker or hotel housekeeper can do, in view of many specialists. For now, Unitree's humanoid robots find their main uses in education and entertainment, or they serve as guinea pigs in the labs of robotics researchers. The most popular model sells for the equivalent of $12,600 or more and is readily available in China for purchase online. Wang, the company founder, told investors earlier this month that he wanted eventually to bring his humanoids into factories and homes. Chinese developers still trail their U.S. rivals in developing robotic AI models, people in the industry say. Just as language models are built on countless texts drawn from the internet and elsewhere, humanoid robots often learn best from real-world physical data, which remains scarce. Chinese companies hope to tap their vast home market to gather data faster. China's approach is to drive technological innovation through rapid iteration and massive production. The immediate challenge is how the economy absorbs all that output, said Lian Jiesu, analyst at research firm Omida. Last year, Unitree shipped more than 5,500 humanoid robots, a scale well beyond what American robot startups have achieved so far. Morgan Stanley predicts overall humanoid robot shipments in China will reach 50,000 units this year and more than 440,000 by 2030. Competition is heating up in both the U.S. and China. Tesla is preparing for mass production of its Optimus Gen 3 humanoid robots. Chinese component suppliers for Optimus said Tesla recently told them to increase supplies to support a monthly output of 8,000 robots by December. Elsewhere in the U.S., Agility Robotics, which is preparing to go public soon, has teamed up with Amazon to test robots in the e-commerce giant's warehouses. In China, Unitree competes with a host of robot makers, including Shenzhen, based in UBT Tech Robotics, which listed its shares in Hong Kong in 2023, as well as car makers BYD and XPeng, both of which are leveraging their expertise in manufacturing and autonomous driving. Raphael Hong is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal in Singapore, covering Asia's technology companies. Basic Materials Roundup, Market Talk. The latest market talks covering basic materials published exclusively on Dow Jones Newswires at 4:20 ET, 12:20 ET, and 16:50 ET. While BlueScope Steel is delivering good cost savings, McGuire questions what will drive its stock from here. U.S. conditions are as good as they get, while conditions in Australia and New Zealand are weak, McGuire says. BlueScope's execution is strong, and the prospect of capital returns is attractive. However, we think these factors are largely discounted in the steelmaker's share price, it says. The bank trims its target on the stock to a $34.35 from a $35.95 and downgrades to neutral from outperform. Shares are up 2.5% at $32.29. Rayanan.Hoyle at WSJ.com. BHP could be expected to take a more cash flow-oriented approach to dividends ahead as commodity prices trade above long-term averages, McGuire says. BHP has a policy of paying a minimum of 50% of underlying profit at every reporting period. The miner surprised with a final dividend of US.99 a share, a 72% payout ratio. McGuire attributes the beat, 22% higher than consensus, to stronger free cash flow and proceeds from a silver streaming deal. The bank raises its target on BHP by roughly 6% to 58.50 Australian dollars a share. It reiterates a neutral rating. Shares are down 0.1% at a $63.81 following a 2.7% gain Tuesday. Rayanan.Hoyle at WSJ.com. Citi thinks there's a modest downside risk to FY 2027 earnings and cash flow forecasts for Evolution Mining. That reflects higher than anticipated guidance on costs and capex, it says. It could be partially offset by stronger gold prices, Citi says. The bank also notes that Evolution's copper price assumptions for the year ahead are lower than its own. Citi has a neutral rating on Evolution with a $13.70 share target. The stock is up 0.2%, a $13.67. Rayanan.Hoyle at WSJ.com. While Evolution Mining has raised its final dividend by 62% to a record high, the market was looking for more, says McGuire. The FY payout of 41 Australian cents a share, while a 2% beat versus McGuire's expectations, is a 5% miss to consensus, the bank notes. FY27 guidance is also soft due to lower than anticipated forecast copper output and higher than anticipated all-in sustaining costs, it says. McGuire has a neutral rating and a $11.50 a share target on Evolution. Shares are up 0.6% at a $13.73 after initially falling as low as a $13.16. Rhiannon Hoyle at WSJ.com. Whitehaven Coal's annual profit misses expectations due to a slightly lower revenue, inventory movement, and higher depreciation and amortization, Baron Joey says. Underlying profit at $227 million Australian dollars is 8% below consensus and 15% lower than Baron Joey's forecast. The coal miners' FY dividend of $0.10 a share is 13% below consensus, but in line with Baron Joey's expectations. FY27 guidance provided with volumes a touch soft, unit costs in line, but capex lower, which may seem consensus earnings and cash flow downgrades, says Baron Joy. The company has neutral rating and a $7.50 share target in Whitehaven. Shares are down 3.1% at $7.52. Rhiannon.Hoyle at WSJ.com. Why Wall Street thinks the brutal bond route is just getting started. Plus, Big Food fights to win over not-so-hungry GLP-1 users, and LinkedIn accidentally becomes a dating site, by Emmer Tucker. 1. From My Desk. Investors are bracing for a new era in bonds, and some see echoes of 2007. A global bond sell-off is raising borrowing costs for governments, businesses, and families, with little relief in sight. The continuing U.S.-Iran war and inflation are part of the story. So is artificial intelligence. This industry's enormous appetite for debt plus puts it in competition with traditional nation-state borrowers. Speaking of AI, big tech is confronting a growing backlash that threatens the foundations of the AI boom. Our reporters take you inside the frantic race to quell it. This is an edition of the 10-Point Newsletter, a guiding tour of the best coverage in the Wall Street Journal. If you're not subscribed, you can sign up. If you're reading this in your inbox, tap the headline above for online and audio versions of this newsletter. Today's headlines. Representative Byron Donalds, President Trump's staunch ally, cruised to victory in the Republican contest in Florida. While a Democratic Socialist state Representative Angie Nixon scored an upset win in the Democrat Senate primary. Trump said he would pause a 50% tariff on certain goods from Canada as the two countries seek an agreement. U.S. officials said Trump is pushing aides for a meeting as soon as this fall with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Iranian attacks on shipping in the Strait of Hormuz are piling up without an American military response. Natalie Harp, a 35-year-old aide to Trump, has become an object of fascination for both the left and the right. OpenAI's second quarter sales show tepid growth compared with Anthropic's. The key to pharma M&A is never shopping hungry, writes David Wehner. Big food companies are fighting to tempt taste buds in the era of weight loss drugs. For decades, food makers have relied on a proven playbook: cater to consumers' taste buds with sugar, salt, and a steadily expanding galaxy of flavors. But for America's biggest food firms, winning over its GLP-1 users is a new challenge, report Amira McKee and Jesse Newman. With 1 in 5 U.S. households now including a GLP-1 user, doubling since early 2025, according to PwC, the drugs are increasingly hard to ignore. J.P. Morgan seeks the treatments, draining the food and beverage industry of $30 billion to $55 billion in an annual revenue as soon as 2030. This cast iron company has been controlled by the same family for 150 years. In an era of public offerings and rich acquisitions, the Lodge family has kept a tight grip on the handle of its cast iron business since 1896. Each year, the 70 family shareholders come to Tennessee for the Lodge Cast Iron Pan Company's annual meeting, the extended family every 5 years on the company's dime. It's a striking example of how family-owned businesses like Lodge remain a force in the U.S. economy, reports Juliet Chung. The tiny Spanish territory of Ceuta is grappling with a new migrant crisis. An abandoned warehouse complex overlooking the Moroccan border and Ceuta has become a squalid village, with hundreds of people living under sheets tied to the sides of buildings and sleeping on broken-down cars and ripped sofas. 3 weeks ago, more than 72,000 migrants poured into this tiny Spanish territory, overwhelming authorities and causing many residents to close up their shops and stay inside their homes. Seeking little hope of making it to continental Europe, most of the migrants left within days. But the thousands who stayed behind, refusing to leave, are creating a humanitarian crisis and a growing headache for local residents. $100 is the price tag some vintage graphic t-shirts were fetching at a recent ThriftCon clothing convention in New York City. Driven by nostalgia and a desire for authentic style, old threadbare tees have turned into big business. And finally, LinkedIn has accidentally become a dating site despite its no-romance rules. Tired of the endless roulette of online dating, more people are looking for a love on LinkedIn. With its clear headshots and ample details about a person's path in life, the professional platform has become a go-to tool for singles. While the platform's guidelines strictly forbid any kind of romantic advances, it's increasingly common for the networking site to feature directly or indirectly in users' dating lives. And then beyond the newsroom, opinion. FCC Chairman Brendan Carr seeks to punish Disney's ABC for getting crosswise with Trump. Now the network is suing. WSJ Buyside, the top financial advisor firms for retirees, can help you manage income, minimize taxes, and ensure your savings last longer. About this newsletter, the 10-point is your guide to the Wall Street Journal's reporting and analysis you can't get anywhere else. Your subscription makes our journalism possible. Today's newsletter was curated and edited by Morgan Smith and Brioni Watson in collaboration with Editor-in-Chief Emma Tucker. Got a tip for us? You can submit it. Big food's biggest challenge, people who don't want to eat anymore. With GLP-1s threatening billions of sales, packaged food makers are testing ways to win over the not-so-hungry. By Amira McKee and Jesse Newman. Inside an Omaha test kitchen, executives in Congra recently huddled over plastic trays of microwaved eggs, potatoes, and sausage. One by one, they lifted a package of cheese sauce and poured out the liquid in a slow orange ribbon. Ashley Lind, who heads behavior science in Congra, studied the breakfast bowl in front of her. She considered, was it satisfying? No one had tested the food yet. That was part of the point. Congra is trying to design products that will entice even people who don't want to eat. The tasting was one of dozens of tests the maker of Slim Jims and a Hungry Man dinners is conducting with an eye towards the conundrum presented by GLP-1 weight loss drugs. The medication's power to erase feelings of hunger and satiation threatens to upend the industry's model for growth, where success has often meant selling as much food as possible. For decades, food companies have relied on a proven playbook, catered to consumers' taste buds with sugar, salt, and a steadily expanding galaxy of flavors. Fine-tuning products to cravings and indulgence has led critics to accuse food makers of hooking consumers on food and snacks, the same way nicotine hooks smokers and fueling an obesity epidemic. But for America's biggest food makers, winning over GLP-1 users is a whole new challenge. They just lose the craving, the desire for food, says Bob Nolan, Conagra's Senior Vice President of Growth Science. Since the drugs broke into the mainstream in 2023, Nolan and his team have been combing through credit card data, social media posts, fast food menus, and late-night delivery orders to decipher what food might still appeal to GLP-1 users and why. As many as 55 million Americans, or 15% of the population, are expected to be on GLP-1 drugs by 2035, according to projections from Morgan Stanley. KPMG estimates users consume about one-fifth fewer calories while on the medications. J.P. Morgan sees GLP-1 treatments draining the food and beverage industry of $30 billion to $55 billion in annual revenue as soon as 2030, a figure that works out to about 3 to 5 times Conagra's current yearly sales. Big food companies are already in a tough spot. Consumers, squeezed by persistent inflation, are tightening their purse strings. Some have been turning away from processed foods, shifting to fresher fare on store perimeters. Others are gravitating towards premium alternatives from smaller companies or cheaper store brands. With 1 in 5 households now including a GLP-1 user, doubled from the start of 2025, according to PwC, the drugs are increasingly hard to ignore. It's one of the most profound changes we'll ever see, said Barb Stuckey, an executive at Food Research and Development from Matson, whose clients have included major food companies like Conagra. The first versions of GLP drugs were approved by the FDA in 2005, initially for managing type 2 diabetes. The drugs mimic a naturally occurring hormone responsible for functions like releasing insulin, slowing stomach emptying, and suppressing hunger. Their effectiveness is spurring weight loss catapulted their popularity. Ozempic was approved in 2017, followed by Wegovy, Mounjaro, and Zepbound. American spending on GLP-1 is surged from $13.7 billion in 2018 to $71.7 billion in 2023, according to the American Medical Association. In late 2023, Walmart's then U.S. President, John Furner, mentioned in a Bloomberg interview that hunger suppressants had consumers buying slightly less calories. Afterward, shares of big food companies slumped. A few months later, Matson, the California-based food developer, gathered a focus group of GLP-1 users who'd lost pounds in the double digits or more since starting the drugs. One consistent theme, a newfound distaste for once beloved food. "It almost felt like I was eating styrofoam," Brian Merwin, Pennsylvania food broker, told the group of his first few months of meals after he started taking Wegovy. "Nothing had really good flavor. I was almost forcing myself to eat." A well-documented side effect of the drugs is called dysgeusia, which can produce an unpleasant metallic taste in the mouth. Richard Doty, president of taste and smell tester company Sensonix International, said the scientific community hasn't figured out why GLP-1s alter taste. For weight loss drug users, not only do flavors not pop, in some cases, spicy or fatty foods can contribute to discomfort and indigestion, said Doty, who is also a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Medical School and previously spent over four decades leading its smell and taste center. Certainly, if people aren't enjoying eating so much, they aren't going to buy as much food, said Doty. Food companies running taste and smell tests on GLP users are among the company's clients. In a kitchen replete with stainless steel fixtures at Conagra's Omaha Research and Development Lab, Holly Favre and other company chefs tinker with basil, parsley, lemon, and a hint of white wine to jazz up a frozen dinner. Favre said the secret to recipes for family favorites is often lots of fat, salt, and sugar. Those ingredients happen to turn off those on weight loss drugs. Bold spices could be another way to sharpen the taste, she said, but for the delicate constitutions of GLP-1 users, that's not a great option either. Instead, Conagra is leaning on the appeal of cozy and nostalgic flavors. Everyone has their mama's meatloaf or grandma's roast chicken, but how we can make this fit all of the boxes for GLP-1s, she said, I don't know. When Conagra's Vice President of Culinary Innovation, Tom Frain, first learned about growing adoption of GLP-1s, he envisioned being tasked with designing rabbit food made with kale and fiber supplements. Instead, he said that GLP-1 users seem to want foods they're familiar with, just in smaller portions and with more protein. Doctors recommend that GLP-1 users increase their protein intake to stave off the muscle loss that comes with rapid calorie cutting. Upping the nutrient is a frequent topic for conversation among users in social media, which Conagra has been closely monitoring. Frain, a trained chef, is now working on protein hero projects like buffalo mac and cheese with 40 grams of the nutrient. To make the protein pop, Conagra designed a custom marinade and added grill marks to the chicken breast slices. A prototype for a frozen burrito with the same protein load was scrapped because the tortilla couldn't hold that much filling. A new protein boost recipe for Conagra's Duncan Hines Chewy Fudge Brownie Mix involves adding a cup of blended cottage cheese and a swirl of peanut butter. The combination gives the dessert twice the protein load and boosts the calories too. The chefs serve their creations to Nolan and Lynn, the Conagra consumer experts, and their employees, fresh out of the microwave or oven, and often in the same disposable packaging the consumer would find on store shelves. Nolan said the company gave up on focus groups years ago, after a series of products went gangbusters among testers, but flopped in the real world. Conagra now has its own employees assess the prototype on behalf of the average customer. Some of them are on GLP-1s themselves, Nolan said. GLP-1 users' subdued urges and impulses pose a particular challenge for the racks of snacks sold in convenience stores and supermarket checkout aisles, where consumption often occurs within 30 minutes of purchase. To keep catching consumers' eyes, Conagra is running word association research studies to find what words and phrases best draw attention without sounding too clinical, like good source of fiber and high in protein. General Mills has turned to a different source for help understanding GLP-1 users, an AI-powered digital persona built from consumer interviews, social insights, and sales data that employees quiz through a computer screen. Lisa represents a woman in her late 30s or 40s with a long history of dieting. Since starting on weight loss drugs, she's eating less, often miniature meals throughout the day. Protein and fiber are her top priorities, and because she juggles work and family, she's looking for ready-to-eat portion-controlled meals. General Mills said Lisa's reactions to new product ideas echoed those of real consumers. That helped the company develop solutions in a fraction of the time usually required, including a new GLP-1-friendly brand debuting soon. General Mills said GLP-1 users share some needs and behaviors with another of its personas, Josh, a gym rat and protein maximizer. said a bar needed more than 15 grams of protein to make it into his daily stack. Based in that part on output, General Mills plans to test a new protein bar under a new brand called ProtEdge. Stuckey, the Matson executive, fields requests from some of the country's biggest food makers looking to miniaturize their products or soup them up with protein or fiber. With few exceptions, she said, they stop short of overtly catering to weight loss drug users. Conagra, for one, doesn't see users driving enough demand yet to justify GLP-1 specific products. For now, the company is looking to wrap the needs of GLP-1 users into the general preferences of the growing number of health-conscious consumers. Last year, the company rolled out GLP-1-friendly badges for its Healthy Choice line of frozen meals, which already tacked some of the boxes users tracked some of the boxes the users are after. Kraft Heinz, the condiment giant, is zeroing not just on GLP-1 users, but also others in their households, whom executives refer to as GLP-1 adjacent. The company is using influencers and others to suggest ways to whiz up home-cooked meals, for instance, by topping protein with its lineup of dipping sauces. Because of drugs are so new, there's also no clear answer as to how long the average GLP-1 user will stay on the medication. Early studies show patients generally return to their typical eating habits after they stop taking the drugs. Still, new pill forms of the drugs, which previously had been administered via injections, are expanding health plan coverage, are set to make them more accessible and affordable. Overseas, cheaper generic versions are already hitting more store shelves. Some analysts believe that food companies are likely to feel most of the impact from GLP-1s in the near future, with heavy snackers also being likeliest earlier adopters of the medications. While lighter eaters may wind up going on GLP-1s eventually, any shift in their food buying is likely would have a smaller impact on industry sales, analysts said. Conagra's team is already formulating products for 2028, keeping a close eye on new anti-obesity drugs currently winding their way through the patient pipeline. Nolan, the Conagra demand scientist, has seen gluten-free, vegan, keto, low-carb, and fat-free diets all wane and wax in popularity over the years. GLP-1s, he said, are different. Think of all the famous brands you see the ads for today. There could be 200 more of these in 5 years, Nolan said, of GLP-1 drugs. These are here to stay. Amira McKee is a news associate at the Wall Street Journal. Jesse Newman is a reporter covering food from the Wall Street Journal's Chicago Bureau. The next article is The Key to Pharma M&A, Never Shopping Hungry. The worst deals in drug making aren't early or late, just desperate. By David Wehner. Everyone who has walked into a grocery store hungry knows how quickly discipline can evaporate. Everything looks like an immediate necessity. The same psychological trap plays out in big pharma boardrooms. Though stakes are measured in tens of billions of dollars, like shoppers trying to keep the fridge stocked, pharmaceutical chiefs are constantly hunting for promising biotech drugs to replace expiring blockbusters. And just like supermarket shoppers, a CEO who walks into the store hungry, staring down a patient cliff with an empty pipeline, is far more prone to expensive, panic-driven mistakes. The better move is to make frequent, smaller trips to the store. In pharma terms, that means making a steady stream of small to medium-sized bets rather than one gigantic deal. For decades, large acquisitions were the classic answer to a patient cliff. When small sales began to drop off because of generic entry, many pharma companies turned to mergers, which added scale and allowed them to strip out duplicative costs. But several of the more recent large deals, including Bristol-Myers Squibb's and 2019 acquisition of Celgene for $74 billion have failed to deliver positive shareholder returns. As a result, investors have soured on that strategy. It's not that it can't work, but the fear is they create enormous integration risk without necessarily improving the long-term growth trajectory. The verdict was abundantly clear recently when AstraZeneca shares plunged following the Financial Times report that it had explored a merger with Bristol Myers. Regardless of how serious the talks were, the signal to pharma boardrooms was to keep it small. So-called bolt-on deals have become the industry staple in recent years. Across the 16 largest drug makers, acquisitions for under $3 billion have been running at roughly two dozen a year over the past decade, according to Norstella M&A, data provided by Evaluate. The pace has been higher in recent years, and 2026 is running hot, with 24 such deals so far this year. Eli Lilly, whose executives have used the supermarket analogy, was behind many of this year's deals. Its Mounjaro and Zepbound franchise generates massive cash flow, with patient protection stretching into the middle of next decade, which means Lilly has time. It can shop for the next decade rather than the next year, placing targeted bets across sleep, gene editing, cancer, and psychedelics to diversify before the obesity drug boom eventually slows. That doesn't mean Lilly is the industry's best deal maker. Its record is mixed, and buying early means many of these bets won't pan out, but it can afford to be wrong. Most pharma companies don't have Lilly's runway, but a little hunger isn't necessarily bad if it focuses the mind. Some of the best deals come after early studies show that a drug works, but before late-stage trial results chip away the discount. In other words, not too early, but not too late. Novartis offers a look at a buyer that has grown more disciplined over time. Its best moves come from getting in early, long before radiopharmaceutical therapy became oncology's hot trend. Novartis paid about $2 billion in 2018 for the platform that yielded Pluvicto, a prostate cancer drug now on track for roughly $4 billion in annual sales by the end of the decade. Not every bet pays off. It took a partial write-down on its $2.9 billion MorphoSys deal after the lead drug hit clinical delays. But under Chief Executive Vas Narasimhan, the Swiss drug maker has steadily narrowed its ambitions towards smaller, targeted bets across a few more fields, with the occasional larger swing on conviction, such as its recent $12 billion deal for neuromuscular drug developer Avidity Biosciences, now growing despite the fact that blockbuster heart drug Entresto is facing generic competition. Novartis has no need for panic buy because it planted its seeds years ago. Merck is the harder test. By all rights, Chief Executive Robert Davis should be the hungriest shopper on the aisle. Merck's cancer juggernaut, Keytruda, generated $31.7 billion last year, more than half of Merck's pharmaceutical revenue, and begins losing patient protection in 2028, patent protection in 2028. A hole that size could make any executive lose their head, march into the store, and grab the most expensive thing on the shelf. And Merck has indeed repeatedly looked at deals over $30 billion. But rather than bet the firm on the overwhelming acquisition, Merck has filled its cart with a string of targeted assets, including the 2021 $11.5 billion acquisition of Acceleron, which gave it the fast-growing pulmonary hypertension drug Winrevair, and the $11 billion buyout of Prometheus in 2023, which was a bet on autoimmune treatment. Many of Merck's deals are on that sweet spot after the data shows the drug works, but still before a late-stage trial has confirmed it. Those are the calculated swings without buying the whole store. Not every bet will pay off, but investors are increasingly rewarding the deal-making. Merck's shares are up more than 60% in the past 12 months, even as it approaches its patent cliff. But risk is inherent in buying biotech companies. The best drug makers, like the best shoppers, don't stop buying. They just make sure they're never so hungry that everything on the shelf looks good. David Wehner is a Heard on the Street columnist and The New Yorker for the Wall Street Journal, waiting on Wall Street's intersection with healthcare, travel, and consumer trends. And from the opinion page, we have the young MAGA socialists are here. Many conservatives in Generation Z think the American dream is gone. Some of us are building it. By Emil Barr. 53% of self-identified conservatives under 40 support government-run grocery stores. Not Democrats, conservatives. Take that in. I run a company that tracks layoffs caused by artificial intelligence, and every month I look at spreadsheets that show my generation losing entry-level jobs faster than anyone anticipated. So when the polling says young Americans have soured on capitalism, I'm not surprised by the anger. I am surprised by who is angry, because the rise of socialism among young Americans is no longer only a Democratic story. Young conservatives who grew up hearing that government was the problem are increasingly asking why the government isn't doing more to make their lives easier, which in 2026 simply means more affordable. They are increasingly comfortable with taxing billionaires, expanding government programs, and blaming some outside group for the sense that the American dream is further away than it was for their parents. The left is embracing socialism openly, but we should worry about how the right is arriving at many of the same conclusions by a different route. In 2025 survey of young likely voters, 42% of conservatives said they would like to see a Democratic socialist win the presidency in 2028. Among 2024 Trump voters, the figure was 35% in another poll. In March 2026, poll found 77% of all voters support raising taxes on billionaires, including 65% of Republicans, 75% of independents, and 91% of Democrats. It also found 62% of voters are more likely to back a candidate who supports an increased billionaire tax versus 12% more likely to support a candidate who opposes it. These aren't disciples of Karl Marx, but they believe the economy is rigged against them, and they increasingly believe the government should step in and fix it. A July 2026 Fox News poll found that 61% of Republicans view capitalism favorably, down from 72% in 2019, while the share who feels strongly favorable has fallen from 51% to 41%. The share who say the system is rigged toward the wealthy has climbed from 30% in 2018 to 42%. I'm 23, and I understand why my generation is frustrated. Unaffordable housing is one of the clearest reasons. The striking part of Zohran Mamdani's win in New York is that the language he used, affordability, rent regulation, hostility to concentrated wealth, now sounds completely normal to millions of young Americans who would never call themselves socialists. I'm not going to tell my generation that everything is fine, but I believe we are making a fundamental mistake when we take a real economic problem and turn it into an argument against capitalism. Capitalism is failing young Americans, but it isn't the reason young Americans are failing. On the left, the villain is usually the billionaire or corporation. On the right, it might be China, immigrants, Israel, or whichever group is being blamed that month for why we can't afford what our parents could at our age. The targets of blame change, but the logic stays the same. Everybody else took what should have been mine, and whoever it is should pay or give it back. This is where the argument gets uncomfortable. Ask young Americans whether they want universal health care, free college, cheaper housing, or more government assistance, and you will find plenty of support. But when you ask who should pay for it, suddenly the revolutionaries get quieter. We want the Nordic welfare state without the Nordic tax bill. We want the government to spend more money while somehow charging none of us for it, which sounds more like a wish list than an economic model. I think my generation is getting capitalism completely wrong, because those of us who are actually building companies are showing that opportunity hasn't disappeared in nearly as completely as some young people believe. For the first time on record, 2025 saw Generation Z entrepreneurs starting more new businesses than baby boomers, accounting for 9% of new business starts in 2025 against 5% for boomers. Most of those founders used AI to get started. It's never been cheaper to try to be an entrepreneur. So which is it? Are we a generation that believes the government needs to rescue us from the economy? Or are we a generation capable of building our own way out? My mother brought me to America from Russia when I was 3 because she believed that her son would have more opportunity here, and she was right. I was able to scale successful businesses as a teenager, negotiate my way through free college, and build a personal net worth of over $20 million, all before turning 23. I didn't do that because government handed me a check, but because America gave me room to try. There are real barriers making opportunity harder to reach, and the government built most of them. Housing supply is restricted by zoning. Licensing keeps capable people out of professions they could otherwise enter. Permitting turns projects that should take months into years-long exercises. If these barriers are making life harder for young people, the answer is to remove them. It isn't to convince an entire generation that capitalism itself is the barrier. Capitalism tells young Americans that the answer is to build something, learn a skill, start a business, take responsibility, and create value. The alternative is to become convinced that every economic problem has an external villain, and every solution has to come from Washington. That's a dangerous idea, regardless of which party adopts it. Mr. Barr is the co-founder of FlashPass and founder of Step Up Social. And that brings us to the end of today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Joanne Lowney, your volunteer broadcaster on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Stay tuned for more interesting programs on Sun Sounds.